Hello and welcome to our next ALOC, or Association of International Educators and Leaders of Color, Oral History Story. Today we're with Dr. Erin Robinson. She grew up as a third culture kid in international schools. She's currently serving as the middle school principal at the United World College of Southeast Asia's East Campus. Welcome, Erin.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It is a pleasure to be with you to share a story.
Awesome. And we can't wait to hear. So just dive right on in.
All right. So I think this was a really tough decision, like trying to figure out what story do I have to share? And I thought maybe I would share the story and sort of micro stories around my decision to go into international schools in the first place. So my parents are educators as well, and they went overseas. They're in the U.S. My mom is from Hawaii, and they decided to go teach in an international school out of public education in the early 70s in Ethiopia. And so they, from then on, sort of decided that they wanted to lead lives as international school educators. So that's how I grew up as a third culture kid. And I think for me, like a lot of TCKs, you know, I had a sense of belonging in international schools because I never quite fit in anywhere else. Whenever we would go back to visit family, I didn't totally relate to everybody else. I didn't have the same, because this is like way back, right? So we didn't have sort of the internet and things to help you keep up with pop culture. So yeah. I was a little off in pretty much everything. And then, so throw on top of that, I've got a multiracial family, and then you really don't fit in a whole lot of places. And so for me growing up, international schools, it sort of didn't matter where it was in the world, had some element of home that I felt. So then going to the U.S. for university and then starting my career in the U.S., I got into a lot of equity work, social justice work. I think part of that actually stems from having grown up as a TCK, having been in a school that was an IB school. So some of those values that we all sort of hope we instill in other students, I think, is I got some of that. And so I pursued more of that, you know, in university. And then when I started my teaching career, and then as I became an administrator in public schools in Colorado. So, and lots of stories around kind of the equity work that I did there. And I loved it. It was my passion, my heart. It was hard. There were tears. There were joy. There was joy. It was really, really good work. But at the same time, I don't know, the U.S. never, like actually being there, didn't, again, feel quite like home. And so I faced a decision whether to continue my career in the U.S. or to move overseas and join an international school community. And that was a really, really, really difficult decision, because on one hand, I had the sense of belonging from international schools. On the other hand, I've been doing all of this equity work. And through that, of course, you examine your own identity and your own experiences and how you grew up. And I came to realize that despite all of the opportunities and the beauty of international schools, it had this dark underbelly of stemming from colonialism, the inherent privilege and power that comes with that, how whiteness and white supremacist culture was intertwined into the fabric of international schools, so much so that you didn't even know that it was around you, really. It was just embedded systemically that far. And so I had these two different sort of experiences to try to make this decision, and it was heartbreaking, actually, because I wanted to be in an international school, but at the same time, I sort of knew that international schools were not going to be in the place to be able to get into the work that I wanted to get into in terms of equity and inclusion work. And was I ready to be in that and face that frustration and try to build it from not coming from a whole lot? Because the other thing that I knew going into international schools, again, is that there's sort of this, there's this belief that because you as a professional choose to go into an international school, you are therefore culturally competent. Therefore, you don't have those kinds of privileges and bias because you've made this choice, which of course is a privilege in itself to have that belief. And was I ready to face that as well? And my mentor at the time, she's just an incredible educator and thinker, and was the founder of the school that I was working at in Boulder. We had a conversation and I'll sort of never forget that she said, that's exactly why. That's why you have to go, because you've got this heart and this passion for the work and it's not happening there. And so you need to go and you need to be a part of it and be part of that journey because you understand it from having grown up inside of it. That was the decision for me to go overseas, knowing that it was going to be a while. And so recently it's just been amazing to see how people have just been coming out and saying, yes, we need to figure this out in international schools and it's not okay. And we can't sort of turn a blind eye to it anymore. And we need to be accountable for the way that we're educating students to go out and be leaders in the world. And so we can't just sort of on one hand say it from a theoretical side of things, and then on the other hand, our schools are perpetuating oppression and privilege and bias, even though we don't, it doesn't look that way on the surface. That's been incredible to see that happening. I'm so excited, very thankful now. international schools, I love it. While being overseas, it's been hard because it's not been a priority to get into this kind of work. It's sort of on sort of a moral standpoint. Yes, this is important work, but then it doesn't get on to strategic plans or it doesn't get the kind of the backing that you would want it to get. I went ahead and pursued my doctoral dissertation in cultural competency sort of as a way to continue kind of being involved in equity and inclusion work, even though I wasn't doing as much as I would like to with schools and that kind of thing. So that's how I came overseas to international schools.
Wow. And so you're now in Singapore. Where are some of the places that you have worked, you know, beyond Singapore?
Yep. So I first went to Hong Kong and I was working at Hong Kong International School. And then after that, I went to Tokyo and then I was at Nishimashi International School and then came here to Singapore. So yeah, mostly in the Asia region. Yeah. And speaking of that sort of international school, family background. My brother is also in international schools too.
Wow.
So he and his family are with Aramco right now in Saudi.
Okay. Oh, you definitely have to link us. I did not know that. I have people who are in Aramco who I've actually been there.
Yeah. So he's been there for a while and my parents before they retired, they were in Abu Dhabi.
Okay. Wow.
Yep.
Small world as ever.
It is a small world. Yes.
Small world as ever. So, you know, part of like what I heard you say was your dissertation was cultural competence.
Yep.
And so thinking about sort of when you wrote that and now, Yep. So sort of flash forward, as I like to say. Mm-hmm. Where do you see, if you were, you know, to pick it back up, you know, dissertation, mm-hmm. Whether it was questions or sort of where you left off or mm-hmm. big ideas, where do you see, you know, what you wrote, when you wrote it, and then right now, you know, in terms yeah. of like relevance and
entering? Yeah, really interesting, because so I wrote that, well, I finished it in 2012, so it was mm-hmm. a while ago now. And have not looked at it since. To be honest, it's one of those things. It's a lot of work, and then you just kind of put it to the side, and you need to recuperate for a while. But I picked it back up just to kind of flip through some of the lit review. And yeah, it's actually really amazing how relevant it still is, because a lot of it is around international schools and kind of historically looking at international schools and how cultural competency fits or does not fit into the model, and of course cultural competency work in that 6 years has moved, but the core, the concepts, the foundation is still there. So all of that is incredibly relevant. And my study, just to kind of boil it down into just a few sentences, was basically looking at whether a teacher's cultural competency had an effect on student engagement. And I measured both the teacher's perception of their cultural competency, and I also asked the students to sort of assess their teacher's cultural competency. Okay. And that came, again, from having grown up as a third culture kid and seeing my teachers, and, you know, again, that idea that just because you're an international school teacher does not mean that you are culturally competent. There's no causation there. So I looked at those two, and a couple of things that came out that were interesting. So the first is that there is an association there where if a student believes that their teacher is culturally competent. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what the teacher believes about themselves, but if the student sees that through their actions, they are acting in a culturally competent way, they are teaching in a culturally competent, or we would say culturally responsive way, then the students were highly engaged. Mm-hmm. So that's what you would hope to see, right? Yeah. But also the interesting thing is that, there was almost, not quite, but almost an inverse relationship between how a teacher saw themselves in terms of cultural competency and how the students saw them. So oftentimes a teacher who felt that they assessed themselves as highly culturally competent, mm-hmm. the students did not see them that way at all.
Wow.
And then on the flip side, the teachers who were sort of harder on themselves and didn't rate themselves as highly in terms of cultural competency, the students actually did see that they were culturally competent. So that was that's like a whole nother study in itself. So that was just kind of an interesting thing that I found in my study that would be good to kind of dig into a little bit more. And I think if I were to pick up the work, it would be around the importance of that professional learning, the teacher training around what does it mean to be culturally competent? What does it mean to be a culturally responsive teacher? What does it look like in the curriculum? And to see it also through students' eyes,
yep.
Because I think that is, we don't do that enough. And that's, I mean, they're our number one client, right? The students. Mm-hmm. And so they need to have a voice in it, and yep. they see things that the adults don't see.
Yeah.
They see what's happening when other adults aren't around. They see the microaggressions that happen. Yeah. They all of that. And so making sure that the kids have a voice in helping to shape that and support their teachers in growing would be hugely beneficial.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that a lot of us are noticing too, when you say like on the side of students and alumni, you know, speaking mm-hmm. out. So, you know, part of me, I'm curious, you know, based on, you know, listening to what you're saying about the cultural competence piece, what changes? I know I've been in discussions recently with some, a few groups around what should be expected of teachers, international school teachers. You know, looking to seeing, you know, groups in order to have standards or sort of expectations in place. I'm looking at seeing what's here, but what's not here, what might be missing. So it'd be interesting to see if there's shifts in terms of, is that language, you know, explicitly built in around being culturally competent on the teacher side, on the leadership side. And then like you're saying on the, what do we expect of our students? You know, I think it was that whole notion of putting them together that it'll work, you know, because we have these different countries, you know, coming together, learning together, that they'll gel together and get along together. But how intentional, you know, are those, is the mindset and those skills and that interaction, you know, being built in, you know, and in a way that they're, you know, picking up on that. So that, like you're saying, to pick it up, I definitely, you know, want to challenge you to do that. I feel like, you know, timing and looking and seeing, listening to, you know, conversations on, you know, the future of education, especially the future of international education. And, you know, based on what we know now and what we see, but what we don't see and what we don't hear. So,
You know, the other thing too, like what you were saying is, that I think is really important is that that things are defined. Because, you know, sort of in the past we've had, you know, being internationally minded or internationalism or, you know, all these words that are just kind of out there, but they're not well defined, and the construct behind them is not understood, and so then they don't do anything. It just sits at a surface level, and so I think that is crucial as sort of a, you know, picking up the work. The first steps that international schools have to do is say what do these terms mean to us? What are these concepts? And what are we trying to do about it? Because if you just leave things in like platitudes, it's going to stay there. Yeah. You have to pull out what's the discrete knowledge? What are the skills that are associated with all of these? Because then you can put training into place. Then you can put expectations. But if it just stays in these sort of generalizations, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely agree. So Singapore.
Yeah,
Singapore. How long do y'all think you're going to stick around in Singapore? And, you know, are there other destinations on your list?
Yeah, you know, Singapore has been so good for us. It's we've got two children now who are both born in Singapore. It's a place that is great for young families, and the school that I'm working at is just incredible. It's I oftentimes refer to it as my dream school, and I think it sort of always will stay that way. It'll have that place in my heart. But at the same time, it won't be forever that we're here in Singapore, and at some point we'll probably go back to the US, and then who knows, go over back to an international school, or, you know, who knows what the future will hold. It'll be kind of a different places, I would imagine.
Yeah. That's the joy and the love of international education.
It is. Well, and you don't have to just get sort of stay in one place, and you know, it's as a TCK, you figure out how to make home wherever it is that you've landed.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, any advice on those aspiring, any advice you would give to those who are aspiring to a leadership role?
Yeah. I think if you are aspiring to a leadership role, it's really important to know yourself and what you stand for, and to find a school that is it a match for you and what you want to do, because, you know, we can all find work anywhere, but you don't want to just be working. You want to be living your passion. And so there's so many different schools out there that they'll be the right matches for you. doing the kinds of things. It, you know, there has to be work and challenge wherever you're going to go. Nowhere's perfect. But you got to find the right philosophical fit, the right support team that you're going to be working with, the right kind of culture and community that you want to enter into. Otherwise, it is just work, and you don't want it to be that. There's a lot of choices out there in terms of school. So I would say, you know, don't get too hungry for sort of career development and promotion and that kind of thing, to the extent that you're going to be in a place where you're not actually happy.
Definitely. And I think that's a good place to pause, is that, you know, making sure that you're in a place where you are happy, because I think that,
yeah, feeling fulfilled.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And contributing too, right?
Yeah,
contributing and doing your piece.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you again, Dr. Erin Robinson, for joining us and sharing, you know, a little bit about your story, your path, your work, your wishes, your writing. We're so just honored to spend some time with you and to find out more about ALOC, for short, as we call it. Visit www.aielok.org.